And now,
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawande Henry Beattie.
And I'm Upenyu Makoni Matenga.
And yes, welcome to the best political podcast with a Zimbabwean based in Zimbabwe. I'm really struggling to make this, to keep every week. It's not a big ask to keep it interesting.
I'm the last of a dying breed.
You know, it's funny. I just realized something. All of us have three names at the start there. It's
that means we're perfect for each other, guys.
Everyone puts out exactly. Name. It's quite long, but yeah. what's up, guys? How's been your week, Henry? What have you been up to?
I've been taking care of myself. I've been relaxed. Chris is trying to make me seem like part of the bourgeoisie. Yeah.
Chris, everyone is a comrade here. Don't do that.
Exactly.
I, in the struggle.
No, that's true. And some comrades had to during the actual struggle had to go to far off places for training and all sorts of things. I know our vice president Boko, I think, was in Russia, so he has strong Russian connections, and hopefully, in the event he one day becomes more than an acting president, we will enjoy many Russian vodkas.
I think we'll have a better relationship with America because we're friends with Russia. Like, you know, just.
I don't think anyone has a good relationship with America. Even America right now doesn't have a good relationship with itself. But anyway, yeah,
I just had to throw Vice President Poco in there so that the First Lady doesn't accuse us of you know, not paying attention to the guy.
Yeah, I need to be called out at a rally, hey?
I have first-hand experience
of that.
Anyway, what's on the show today? Today, what's the date today? Just to get that out of the way. The 23rd.
Today is the 23rd of September. And today I think we will begin with the. It's now being called hyperinflation, or the economic situation in Zim, of course. And then,
or what we like to call life.
Life. Wow.
2008.
Yeah. Yes, 2.0. Then Comrade Themba Mlisiwa in Parliament and his comments to the Minister of Finance. Then some updates on the voter registration and all the procedures and what's going on there. And then we'll just round it up with the United Nations General Assembly as some beyond. We'll talk about what happened in New York.
Mm-hmm. Not just Chatunga and he's buying Gucci and stuff.
I feel
and
like McDonald's, that was for
and McDonald's.
Me. I feel like Gucci, you're saying that for me, like for my benefit.
I mean, it happens, so we must discuss it. It's you know.
Yeah. But okay. Straight into. This is going to be a battle of the titans, because in our private group for the podcast, Upenyu called the current situation hyperinflation.
Yeah, and
Chris disagrees.
No,
so I want
now
to
I have
know
to
why
retract.
You guys.
No, and now I have to retract, unfortunately, for the debate, because
she was correct.
No, she was correct.
Yes,
she was very correct. I spoke from a position of ignorance. And so I went and did some research and I found that, no, she was very correct. So,
well, it's not my first rodeo, Ka. It's not the first time.
Yes, tell us about the hyperinflation situation in Zimbabwe.
All what I know is that my face cream, and yes, I know these are, you know, privileged person problems, but my face cream went up in price 300%, and I'm mad because now I'm going to be out there in the world with bad skin.
No, that's
you guys are like, what the fuck?
No, it's a real problem.
No, this is a real problem, though, because it's a reflection on a very privileged level of what's really going on. So imports have gone up in price 200-300%, 400% in some cases. I'm not sure what the prices are. I know things like basic commodities, so cooking oil, salt, have also increased in price, but to a lesser extent. But this has been slowly going on for the last, what, year and a half? So
yeah,
it's a rock that is creeping its way, actually not creeping, but rolling down the hill very, very quickly.
Someone shared a picture on social media. I don't know which supermarket it was, but they were saying one bottle of cooking oil per person. So it's definitely gone back to those days of rationed
of things.
Yeah, of things being rationed.
I find anyone, I was reading those Rolling Alpha articles, and the author has a roadmap to a destination in terms of the hyperinflation thing. And it's really, he hit the nail on the head, because he says the first thing that happened is the prices of goods that have to be imported will spiral. So that's why you see Nivea. That's why you see things like that going up first. Then next, you'll see local manufactured goods with imported inputs going up. So I'm sure even locally produced mafuta will start going up, things that obviously have some type of input. And then lastly, the locally grown grains and cereals that have already had their inputs for the season come in are going to also begin to go up. This is obviously not to mention, the difficulty in finding fuel, which, I mean, I'm not on the ground, so it's very difficult for me to speak on it. But, I mean, I saw a tweet by Rueneko where she was asking where she can find diesel 50. Once again, first, specifically diesel 50 for a very nice Mercedes. And she didn't know which fuel stations were stocking it. So, I mean, it seems like the RBZ is just running around putting out fires, because they've then come out and said that, you know, our gold revenues, our gold receipts for the last quarter were the highest they've been ever. But because there's such a shortage of foreign reserves, that money is straight in and immediately goes out to pay for things like fuel imports and other imports.
Trips to New York, I mean.
And Rolls Royces and houses in Sandton.
So this is the thing, excuse me. The long and short of it is, you know, I'm not an economist, so I can't, you know, articulate some of the finer points. But the way I understand it is, bond notes came, good money drives out bad money drives out good money. All the US dollars have been swept up and then they were squandered. And so now there's a shortage of foreign currency. Foreign currency affects the goods we import and the price of the goods and all of that. But on the flip side is, we actually have had a good agricultural season and a good mining season. So we have been exporting goods. The question is, what is happening to all of that money? And the second question is, how do we actually get out of this situation? Because in the last hyperinflation situation, we then dollarized our economy, and that relieved the situation we're in. Overnight, not so to speak, the economy picked up and things changed. But now we have a situation where we already have a dollarized economy. You can't re-dollarize if such a thing exists. So how do we get out of this situation? What actually needs to be done?
So,
Go ahead,
Opinion.
Firstly, he was the big, what I got from those posts on Rolling Alpha was that government expenditure is the biggest issue, because it's actually in effect what's eating up the, what is it, hard currency. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing, because his main point in the second blog was that it's essentially a political crisis. that hyperinflation is a political crisis, which I completely agree with. And until we solve the politics, you know, even if we solve this round of hyperinflation, and I'm very curious to see what kind of creative economics, what kind of casino economy will be created by this. If until we solve the politics, it's just, it's a never ending cycle.
Yeah, I completely agree. It literally has been a cycle from 2008 back here. Just to go in terms of where we're going or how it's going to be solved, he, in that article, he gives three possible scenarios. The first scenario, he says, is that we go to a weaker currency. So we rand eyes, we stop using the US dollar and we change US dollar balances to rands, which, you know, will have short-term things like making our exports more competitive and things like that, because it's now a weaker currency. The second scenario is a complete collapse of the Zimbabwean formal banking sector, which will then, if the banks collapse, your political institutions will collapse and we become Somalia, essentially. But the third solution is what he's probably said is what's going to happen, is that, you know, there's a bailout from the IMF and the World Bank, and there'll be political reforms based on that bailout and that money coming in. And I think ZANU has already been preparing for this. That's why you hear so many people talking about, oh, the West is courting a certain vice president. That's why you saw Chinamasa taking money we essentially didn't have to clear some arrears with the IMF and these Bretton Woods institutions, because they see that the only way that we're actually going to get out of this crisis is with some sort of bailout. Now, if ZANU wins in 2018, would we be able to get that bailout to the same level of bailout? I don't know about that. But I'm sure if they win in 2018, very soon you'll be hearing John Anonyeba Mangujga saying, oh, we're going, is it Anonyeba or Panonetsa?
It's Panonetsa.
Panonetsa. Honest mistake. Honest mistake.
Wow. Honest. Wow.
But yeah, no, I'm sure the next thing, and you've heard even Mzembe in his BBC Hard Talk interview talking about the rand, I'm sure that's where we're going to next, is we become a rand-based economy. But whether the South African Reserve Bank would let us bastardize their currency like we've done to the US dollar, I don't know. I hope they don't, because it'd be bad for them. But yeah, I hope, and it would be just a short-term solution for us. So it's not really a solution.
Well, the thing is, yeah. So this is the thing: is number one, would South Africa want us in the rand economy? I don't think so, because our government.
What do you mean?
No, I'll tell you why. It's because our government doesn't play nice. Number one, I don't think they can be trusted. So, and also, they are not the type to want to be controlled. And the South African Reserve Bank will definitely not want to give Zimbabwe free rein on how to conduct its monetary policy with the rand. So basically what will happen is we lose control of our monetary policy, and I don't think that is something our president is going to want to do, especially to the South Africans. With a different president, I can definitely see such an arrangement being made and agreed upon. But with the one we have currently, I wouldn't put money on it. So I don't think we're going to join the RMU under a Mugabe presidency.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful news, guys.
It's crazy, guys. A US dollar in Zim is not the same as a US dollar everywhere else in the world. Like, you know, I've been reading up on it, and this guy uses the example of the Old Mutual stocks, and Old Mutual has stocks in London, is listed on the London Stock Exchange, on the Zim Stock Exchange, on the Joburg Stock Exchange. So essentially, this is a layman's description, or this is my understanding of it. Those stocks are fungible. So if you buy in South Africa, you can sell in London. If you buy in Zimbabwe, you can sell in London. Or if you buy in London, you can sell in Zimbabwe. The same stock. It's the same stock because it's the same company worldwide. In London, it's $1.20 or for a stock of Old Mutual. In Harare, it's $7.
Yeah, so our so stock exchange is...
But it's crazy.
People are finding safe, and I put that in inverted commas, places for their money. So they can't trust the cash, so they're going to go to whatever else it is they can find. And as a result, stocks are overpriced. But that, I think, has finally reached its ceiling, because last week it was at 11 billion. The counter for the ZSC, and this week it's gone down by about 300 million. So 300 million. So it's at 10.8 billion. So I think it's finally reached its ceiling. It's very scary when it continues to go up, because people will lose a lot of money if this thing...
A lot of money,
if this thing just crashes, which it's very, you know, it's at that point where I think something terrible could happen. But I don't know. We'll see how it turns out. There's all these pictures of money on the streets, bond notes, newly pressed bond notes that are circulating on social media. There's the bond coins, $3 million worth of bond coins
It's what Gono did. Gono was printing Zim dollars and sending runners out. There's lots of popular rich people that we know in Zimbabwe, these young rich guys that started off by being Gono's runners to go and burn currency and effectively buy hard cash on the streets. And that's something that has been known. And Manguji is doing the same thing. He's sending out more bond notes so that they can mop up the last bits of US dollars on the market. In fact, I've got a source in Zim who's in an industry where they handle cash. They have lots of cash, and he's saying that they sold over $2 million worth of cash to the RBZ at a rate.
Yeah, I mean, the good old professor did say that the bond note is trading at... what did he say?
It wanted $1.10, which is a lot.
Yeah, at $1.10 or whatever. So
he said 105, 110, I think is what he said.
105, 110. So they know this is going on. They've admitted to it. The rates, of course, are junk, but you know they are part and parcel of what is happening, because they've done this before. So this is nothing new for them.
I think it's frustrating having, you know, already participated in the rodeo and ridden the bull to be back here again. I'm particularly angry because I get paid in US dollars, and where I work for an NGO, which means that the money I get is real money. And somehow, as it enters my bank and as it comes out, it is no longer real money. You know what? I'm just angry and frustrated, because literally the value of my salary is now a third of what it was 12 months ago. So I don't know. I want to choke someone with a bond note. I don't know who yet, but I have three people in mind.
It's not strong enough.
Well played, comrade. Well played.
Slow clap. it'll continue to get worse and worse. And the thing that makes me the most frustrated is that I'm, you know, it's US dollar. My money is real money, but it's not real money. You know what I mean? It's not. And neither can I then just simply cross the border and go buy some things anywhere else, because it's...
It's monopoly money. So the people were hoodwinked, and now they must find... 2018 provides them an opportunity to make a change in government, because Basically,
yeah, it's very quick of water.
Basically, you don't want the people hoodwinked you to hoodwink you yet again. So voter registration started. It's been 1 week that it's been ongoing. We've heard different things, or at least I have from different people. I don't know, Penyu, did you go register? Did you try to?
No and no. Because I'm too busy trying to get my bond notes out the bank. Yeah, the voter registration process. Oh, Rita Makara was on Ruvenico a few days ago. I didn't listen to it, actually.
No, I didn't. I haven't seen it either. Did you watch it?
Yeah, it was, you know, the same old. But what she's, I think people are spreading despondency about the process. I mean, you know, it's not your fault. Obviously, you're reacting to the hurts from before. But we also need to keep in mind that our government is not, it's not shiny and new. Neither is it efficient. So, you know, it's not a great big conspiracy, I don't believe, to disenfranchise voters because they need us as much as we don't want them. But, you know, things like forms not being available and the slowness of the process is, as Rita Magrao said, it's a new thing. And so you have to be patient with the process. Yes, you know, the amount of time and the number of voters and wada, wada, wada. But as opposed to, because I see a lot of people on social media pulling down the voter registration process. Oh, I'm not going to vote because what? Go register. Be patient with the process. If they don't have forms, show up and give them forms if you're able to print. I like Fadzi's approach to it, which is more, okay, if these are the insufficiencies, how can I, it's very pragmatic. How can I then help or contribute towards making this as a better, you know, experience. So as we go, it will improve. I understand the remaining, is it 2,600?
Kids.
Yeah, the remaining 2,600 kids are expected on October 14th. And from there, they will increase the number of centers and, you know, and so forth and so forth. But if you can, please have your affidavit commissioned. What's the word that they use in lawyer speak? Made official.
Certified.
Yeah, have it certified before you go, because that's actually what's creating the problem, that there's one person who has to be the commissioner of oaths and then has to do fingerprints. This is in Bari. And because of that, it becomes slow. But it's just
you can go straight.
Yeah.
On that note, I mean, quick shout out to Obed Gutu, Moses Mavaire, and a few other lawyers that have brought their stamps and just sat down at Inbari and commissioned and just you know, acted as commission of oaths there. I understand the ERC, the Electoral Resources Center, is putting together lawyers to basically do my shift. For commissioning oaths at Hans commissioning oaths for certifying documents at the center. But I don't know how it's going to work when there's now, you know, 20 centers in Harare, or 14 centers. There's going to be 14 centers in Harare, and then you need 14 lawyers at each place. But I mean, yeah, like, you're right. People are. We just need to get it done. Really,
aren't there thousands of lawyers in Harare?
Mm.
Yeah,
I mean, where are you?
Civic duties.
Where are you?
You know, yeah? I honestly think that people need to be invested in this process because it is so important. So I wrote an article on the youth and why they should register to vote. And in doing some of the research, I found that 1.9 million people and between the ages of 18 and 30 were not registered to vote last election. That's 70% of the potential voters within that age group. President Mugabe won the election with 2.1 million votes. So you've essentially got an amount of people who literally, with plus or minus another 300,000 people, could have won an election for anybody had they all voted together. And I'm not saying they would have, but this is the size of the people that were simply not registered to vote. And I agree with you, Penyu, that with a lot of the talk that's going on, it makes people discouraged from wanting to, you know, go through the process. It takes too long. Atinama form, or it's atinama my documents, and they won't sign, so why should I bother? So I think the messaging needs to be very different, and people need to be encouraged more so, because traditionally young people between the ages of 18 and 30 haven't registered to vote.
Just to vote.
Simply yeah. that. So people need to be encouraged. Yes, we get ZEC is inefficient. Yes, we get that the process is not easy. And there are all these things, and ZEC's inefficiencies and all the problems do need to be called out. But in calling them out, you should also recognize the more important thing is to actually get people registered to vote. So it's going to be challenging. It's not going to be easy, but I think people should focus on the fact that let's get people registered to vote. That should be the most important thing that people actually do.
Yeah, definitely.
It's called a struggle for a reason. And this expectation that it's going to be like what it looks like they do in America, where, you know, you show up and it's going to be wonderful, and it's a struggle for a reason. And I think for those of us who have the privilege of being able, and sometimes even the luxury of having your documents and so forth, and we're out here talking shit on social media about the process that you do not wish to participate in, I think it does a disservice, because in as much as we say and so forth, part of that is us. And if we're not showing up, then it's easier, isn't it, to steal the election?
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know why we take such pride in, you know, being a resilient people, you know, economy, but we're not even putting our hands up. We're not able to do something like registering and voting.
And this is the thing, is that there's no right at this stage. You don't even have to know or care who you're voting for, but give yourself the option.
Register.
Yeah, give yourself the option, so that when the time comes, you actually just can choose someone.
And also, let's not forget there's a new voters' roll, so everyone needs to register to vote, not just youths. So speak to your Nana Mama, Nana Gogo, Nana Mbuya to remind them, Kuti, it's a new voters' roll completely. So if you voted in 1980 and you think your name will still be there, you should vote again, because it's really everyone's struggle. I don't think anyone is exempt from the things that are going on in Zim. And of course, we are youth focused, and everyone is focused on the youth, but it's everyone really needs to play a part in this coming election. It's that important.
Yes. Yeah. And once we get to vote, once you are registered, you'll have the responsibility to vote for councillors, members of parliament, and the president.
Yes. Speaking of members of parliament, our favorite independent.
Yes.
Our favorite independent, Honorable Themba Peter Mliswa, had some choice words for the Minister of Finance and Economy. Yeah, TP.
okay.
Peter.
Really?
Sorry, I didn't know.
Chris. I'm a file.
Yes, anyway, carry on. Sorry.
He had some choice words for the Minister of Finance and Economic Development. I've got the answer right in front of me. Yeah. And, I'll give you a brief quote, just his opening paragraph. he said, there's a shortage of foreign currency, and any foreign currency which is to leave this country has got to be prioritized. I would like to know whether the money that was used by the First Lady to buy a house in South Africa, and equally the money used by Rachel Gureza to buy cars outside the country, was a priority, and did it also have foreign exchange approval? Question mark.
Ember.
fighting words. And
I'm here for him. That's what I want. You know, I don't necessarily agree with his politics, but I'm here for his line of questioning and inquiry in Parliament, because these are the, you know, why are we making it that some people are above being asked about what it is that they do with our money, particularly my money? Can you tell I'm mad?
No, it's a fair point.
And his first, because on when they opened Parliament, when was that? Tuesday, Monday. I mean,
Monday.
He asked. Tuesday. You know, he was posing the same questions, and Tuesday. Thank you. Yeah. He was posing the same questions, and these are now issues that affect all of us. And it's not simply a, you know, yes, you have a right to spend your money how you want to spend it, but kana takutaura na kuti tirikuburitsa, we're giving some people privilege and other people have to suffer as a result. That is an issue for Parliament. It's not just
it's
now an issue that everybody must talk about.
I completely agree. Temba raised the level of debate within Parliament, and I think it was Honorable Maridadi who then, you know, said give him more time, and they offered him more time to continue speaking, because he addressed not just that issue but a whole lot of other issues to deal with the things that we've been discussing, the fact that a lot of our laws have not been aligned to the Constitution. So basically, on the opening of Parliament, the President gave a speech, and this was the reaction to the speech that the President gave. And the President spoke about, you know, how Parliament had passed laws and they were aligning the laws to the Constitution. And Temba called out some of the things that the President said and said, no, you know, you've said that there's only 30, I think he said, laws left to be aligned. What happened to the other 400 and something? So he was very clear, and he spoke on a number of issues, and he spoke, he had facts to back up some of the things that he was saying. And it was refreshing to see that such discussions are taking place in Parliament, aside from the back and forth heckling and all of the other silly things that go on, and all of the ducking and diving that our ministers do when they are asked questions during that question and answer time. So I think if other parliamentarians can follow that line and that approach to being inquisitive, being, what's the word I'm looking for? Researching things and actually bringing things out. And also, if we then have a parliament that is not majority ZANU-PF or super majority ZANU-PF, then we can move to a space where our parliament is actually able to hold our executive to account, where we actually have laws going through that are beneficial to the people of Zimbabwe. But what it takes is us actually having or putting people into parliament who have the capacity to raise the level of debate and raise issues that are pertinent to, you know, the everyday person. I completely agree that there really should be certain audits of how people are able to buy two Rolls Royces, how people are, spending $4,000 or whatever it is in nightclubs around Harare, how people are taking, or why the government is taking 70 officials to New York, some of them who aren't even officials. All of these things need to be scrutinized by Parliament, and people actually need to answer to some of these things. So in this current Parliament, we'll only talk about it and nothing will happen. But hopefully in the next one, we actually have a lot more accountability.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. It's refreshing. And he was so well researched, because the excerpt I just read out was from the 20th, was the Wednesday, when the minister was in. But on Tuesday, you know, he's speaking about the Auditor General's reports you know, those recommendations. And, you know, he's even speaking on you know, the land developers bill and how it affects his constituency. And, you know, you really have to give kudos where it's due. You don't always have to agree with Temba, and I very often don't agree with some of his statements and, you know, his obsession with a certain cabal of gangsters. But
cabal of gangsters?
Yeah.
Lacoste?
Let's not name names, guys. No, let's not name names.
No, the gay gangsters.
Oh, right.
his words, not mine. But yeah, no, it's definitely refreshing. And, you know, I don't know why we don't have more of this. I understand why ZANU-PF MPs have no need to do this, but I don't understand why the MDC, with well-educated the lead of the house for the MDC is, you know, Dr. Kupe. She's very well-educated, and I can only point to a few times Anna Jessima Jomea there. I mean, she stand out as well. But what about the rest of them?
How many parliamentarians do we have in total? 270?
Yeah,
members of parliament. And
yeah,
I can name a handful who actually contribute to debates in parliament. I think there was something that came out, was it last year or the year before?
Parliamentarians who haven't said anything.
Yeah, who haven't said anything in 4 years. At all.
Were you doing? Just collecting your allowance.
I'm really trying to understand. So, in as much as we're going towards an election, it's the quality of the people we elect should be scrutinized. I know it's something that is very difficult to speak mm-hmm. about and to assess, because we are not at a stage where ideas matter, but it should be something that people actually consider and think about. That we need people who, number one, will represent you and represent your interests. So you need people that you know will be able to do that. But number two, to also raise the level of debate and discussion happening in our parliament. Because if that happens, then we can have quality, you know, laws being passed, or when laws come through, they are actually looked at and scrutinized on whole rather than just rubber stamped. And again, that comes back to not having a ZANU supermajority.
Yeah, I think even ZANU supporters don't want a ZANU supermajority. not you specifically, but I mean, I've heard people, you know, we have one comrade who's even said it doesn't make sense to have a democracy doesn't work without a strong opposition. It just simply doesn't.
Because it's not legitimate.
No, even if it's legitimate, there's just no checks and balances. Simply no checks and balances. You know, so...
Speaking of checks and balances... the Constitutional Court seems to be checking and balancing. Can we talk about,
because this is a neat segue, but can we talk about what Temba said about super executives? Dr. Amai, the super executive, who has the power to prevent, because it speaks to this issue, to prevent an investigation into, shall we say, malfeasance by the current Minister of Higher and Tertiary Education. Now you can say what you want to say, Chris.
Yeah, no, I was being very cheeky on the day. So the Constitutional Court threw out Professor Jonathan Moyo's application against his arrest charges by Zach. He was questioning Zach's arresting powers. And the Constitutional Court said, well, this is not our issue. It should be dealt with at a lower court. So I believe that, you know, he'll take it to the High Court or to the Magistrates Court. I don't know which one, that will then look at the issue. But basically, it's been thrown out by the Constitutional Court, and it's likely that Zach will try at some point to rearrest him. But then, as you said... As you said, Upenyu, Mai Mugabe has twice come to his defense and said that the charges laid against him are fraudulent and part of a factional agenda. The sad thing is, though, she has no authority in any capacity. Maybe Women's League, she can, you know, I don't know, throw out, of which that goes to a disciplinary hearing, but then she is judge and jury, Koko. So she can throw out who she wants, Women's League or accuse and all those things, Women's League. But on a national platform, really, she has no...
She has no power.
Yeah, she has
no power. Can we say that?
Yeah, she has no... Well, she technically has no power to deal with any of these things, and she shouldn't be allowed to make such statements, because it really then puts a lot of people under undue pressure.
Not just that, but it undermines the executive itself.
Exactly.
If you're allowing somebody, by virtue of the fact that they married someone, to speak on executive issues, to essentially run a country, it means your executive is ineffective. It's not able to carry out what it wants to do, because we have a queen, and maybe that's what we should admit to. Kuti, this is in essence a monarchy.
It is.
Is this thing on?
I mean, but inga one ma prophetess and go, if can a babari prophetess, am I on avoid a prophetess?
No,
my one is so that's a voluntary organization. Manje kunoku, you know, you see, the thing is, nobody voted for her to be anything.
Thank you.
Even exactly. Women's League, she was appointed, she wasn't voted.
I don't know, voted anyway. She has not earned
she was
the
nominated
ability.
And I don't know how the process works. But anyway, she really has no authority to be speaking on such things. So the Constitutional Court throws it out. We'll wait and see. On the day I asked Prof. Kandi Mudumbu.
That was a cheeky tweet. Did he respond?
He didn't. And, you know, the papers the next day had all of this, Jonathan Moyo to go to jail or something of the sort. That was Newsday and Daily News. And he said no comment, and his lawyers published something about how they will take it to the next, to whichever courts they need to. And we'll see how it plays out. I really do hope that it isn't thrown out, that he actually is arrested and he comes up.
That would be something else, wouldn't it?
It really would. But the thing is, in terms of the fact that allegations have been put forward, and there seems to be evidence, I think that it needs to see its day in court. This needs to be something that actually comes through. If the courts do find that he, you know, that there's no need for an investigation, fair enough. But the police should investigate, because they have the responsibility to do that as per the Constitution. Zach doesn't have the resources or the power to do so, but they have the authority to ask the
police to
launch an investigation. So because these allegations have been brought forward, then it should be seen through as is in the Constitution. So I don't know, we'll see how it plays out. I really hope that they can be...
Do you have faith in the process?
you know, the thing is, because I recognize the factional aspect to it, it could turn out to be a blessing in disguise. I don't know if that, you know, makes sense, that one side is really trying to get the other side, so at some point they really do then just expose each other. As we're going towards the 2018 election, whatever happens in the end, I can see President Mugabe pardoning him if he is said to be guilty. that I can definitely see happening. So maybe we'll get a bit of a circus and then it will just die down.
Do you think Mugabe would really pardon a man?
Yeah.
Well, you know.
The current Zimbabwean representative at the United Nations was arrested and charged for the in the Willigate scandal. And he was pardoned. And now he's Zimbabwe's ambassador to the United Nations.
Yeah, but that was in the past, guys.
Shava. Iweshaman. A leopard doesn't change its spots.
She just...
And
the thing is, you know why he would do it? Because one thing Mugabe has been really good at is ensuring loyalty. And what more better way to ensure loyalty than to have someone beholden literally for your freedom?
Of which also Professor Jonathan Moyo-Mutengesi, you know, he...
You know, why are you using such bad words?
No, it's true. He plotted to oust the president in 2004.
The Chulucho declaration.
Yeah.
So do you think Mugabe is like keep your enemies really, really close?
No, Mugabe is mafioso. It's mafioso. Yeah, he knows how to run a mob, and that's what he does. That's how the party is run.
I mean, look at
the same principles of El Chapo Guzman and Pablo.
look at Chipanga. Chipanga was Kwame Mujuru.
Yes.
Akazo defecta akaenda ku Lacoste. Ku G40. Akazombo defecta akaenda ku Lacoste. I mean, that guy has no loyalties. So
and he's just trying to survive in Zimbabwe.
He is. But the thing is, such a person can be used. It can be used against him. The fact that Mutengesi, according to them, so they will always remind him of the fact that Iwe Ongor Kwame Mujuru, and we've given you a lifeline. So who are you going to be? Yeah, who are you going to be loyal to? You know.
One thing that Mugabe did do, okay, do you know who wrote his speech at the United Nations General Assembly? Do you know?
I don't. I'd like to believe it was George, because that's
his job. It sounded like George. At least the text sounded like...
Such a good speech. I love that speech.
No, it was such a good speech.
I know, right? He could be our permanent representative to the United Nations.
Exactly. I would be very happy with that.
I support that.
So,
but yeah, no.
Interesting things happened at the UNGA. First Mugabe's speech, where it was milder than previous speeches, I must say.
Gold Goliath is mild.
You see, the thing is, he wasn't as explicit in his calling out. He was more nuanced and it was, what can I say, metaphorical, and had a lot more humor
than
previous. It was a very good speech. You know, he spoke about all sorts of things, the usual things, Palestine and Israel, but he also spoke about the need for reform in the United Nations, and he spoke about Trump blowing his trumpet for unity and peace and all sorts of things. And we mentioned in the group that the irony of his speech, because these are some of the things that back home need to be done, you know, unity and reform and all sorts of things. But the one thing that made international headlines was when Trump was speaking, the poise of the Zimbabwean delegation
fell apart, just embarrassed us.
They didn't embarrass us.
No, I think
for
guys.
Me, that's the best diplomatic move the Zimbabweans have made since...
You see, the thing is, the rest of the world was quite excited because our president was sleeping or resting his eyes or shielding his eyes, whatever Comrade George likes to say.
Thinking about his words.
Bonyongwe had this... couldn't be bothered look on his face. Shava, who is our representative also had this, could this end look on his face. Like, everyone sort of had this, wow, why are we here type thing. And the caption at the bottom of the CNN screen said, was talking, said something about Trump speaking at the United Nations. And then it had zero.
It was, no, it was classic optics. And then his speech was witty. He said, Mr. Trump, please blow your trumpet. Blow your trumpet in a musical way towards the values of unity, peace, cooperation, togetherness, and dialogue. No, it was a witty speech. And, you know, I'm contending with the idea that Trump is less popular than the dictator
than Mugabe. How can that be?
You see, the thing is, so the United Nations is founded on values of peace and international security. And Trump really, in his speech, came out and he was...
Well, he threatened North Korea with extinction.
He was like, yes. I don't care who you are, UN. I'm here to tell the world that I'm...
Called him Rocket... He called Kim Jong-un Rocket Man. And he said, you know, he'd annihilate them if it came to it. Which... At the UN is very, you know, it's the exact
unusual.
It's the exact opposite of something that should be happening at the UN. And Mugabe was the only one to call him out and say, but Kogai, how far? You know, you can't be coming to the UN and talking.
But the world really, you know, in some way misses, you know, these statesmen. I suppose Mugabe knows, you know, in days gone by, I don't think that you know, with some of the great French presidents of the past and other delegations, I don't think they would have stayed in the auditorium while Trump was threatening another country. You know, someone made the comment that it's happened before where people have actually walked out in the middle of the speech because of what was being said. In years gone past, if Gaddafi, for all his faults, was there, if Hugo Chavez, for all his faults, was there, I think, you know, the house would have been a very, very different place. But I guess we're living in a post-truth, post-9/11 world where these things happen. But back to Mugabe's speech and people calling out the hypocrisy of it, we made this point on the group, but I think what some people don't realize is that, at least in my opinion, or in geopolitically speaking, Zimbabwe is a minnow. We're a small nation. So while that speech is at an international forum and it does make international headlines, essentially it's also meant to send a message to the Zimbabwean people, because we're the only people that are really truly invested in it. And when we call out his hypocrisy, it's because we're the only people that care. and I know some people are saying, oh, you should be at an international forum making speeches for the international world. But, you know, even Donald Trump's speech was a foreign policy speech, but essentially it was directed at his base. Basically saying America first. That's what is directed at his base. He was talking, you know, optically to the world, but he was essentially speaking to American people about how he wants to go about it. So, you know, people have problems with us calling out Mugabe and his hypocrisy, but at the end of the day, that speech is a domestic speech.
No, certainly, I agree. You know, you represent the interests of your people, even when you're at an international platform speaking to an international audience about international things. So it's definitely words that we all wish he would take, internalize, and see through, rather than take his entire family to Gucci and McDonald's.
This is how Mugabe hurts me, though, because, you know, he'll go and it's for a local audience, etc. But, you know, he's there, he's the little guy, because I really like that David Goliath analogy. He's the little guy and he's speaking truth to power. Unfortunately, he doesn't let the same happen in his own backyard. And it's, you know, I'm conflicted. this is, he's hurting me because I'm at one, I want to hate him, but I also want to love him because I hate Trump so much. So
and Trump did say that his friends like Africa. They like to come to make money in Africa.
In Namibia.
Yeah, he was Namibia, which is what did we say? It was next door to Wakanda and
Zamunda.
Zamunda, yeah.
Did you guys know it's the 111th made up African country according to Wikipedia?
Is there really a list of made up
countries? Yes, there's a list.
Wow.
There is a list of made up African countries. Wakanda is on it, so is Zamunda. Wow. And West Angola.
Wow.
Okay. All right, guys. I unfortunately have to make a move, but yeah, I don't know if anyone has anything else on Beyond, because if we're speaking about Trump, I think we can be here for the whole day.
That is true.
I'm done.
We've done good time. I think we're at 55 minutes now, so
yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, before I go, just obviously, guys, register to vote. If there are any lawyers listening, contact ERC, use your stamps. Also, for those guys in diaspora, if you go to Fadzi Mahere's page, she is offering you guys an opportunity to sponsor transport for someone to go register and vote. And also, Citizens Manifesto have said that if you can get a group of between 12 to 16 people together, they'll come and pick you up and take you to the registration center for free. So, yeah, there's a number of initiatives. And yeah, for us in diaspora, for anyone who does listen to this outside of the country, sponsor your relatives or find some way, because you might not be able to register, but certainly your money can make an impact. It's $2 for someone to catch a combi to and from the registration center. 500 to town, 500 to Mbare. It's funny how the currency works.
How you call it 5 rand when it's actually
it's 50 bonds.
There's things that we can do even from here, and everyone just really needs to play their part, because I think that it's partisanship aside, really it's about Zimbabwe as a country. So I don't care who you vote for, even if you're going to vote for Goblin, I'll pay for you to go and register.
Watanga Matigari, Watanga. And on our side as well, we have a Twitter account. We reopened one after the last one got shut down. Which I believe shows that we were a bit anarchist, so we've done some good things.
We were hacked.
Yeah.
But yeah, sorry, guys. I'm going to dash before you guys wrap up. And yeah, I'll talk to you guys later.
Right, cool.
See ya.
Bye.
Yeah, so you can find us on Twitter, Politics and Beyond ZW, I think is the Twitter handle. Am I correct, Benio?
Yeah, Politics and Beyond ZW. Do I tell lies? Okay.
I lied. Polly and Beyond ZW is the Twitter handle, so follow us on Twitter. We'll be engaging people there, also trying to see if we can get some graphics going. Actually, if anyone would like to help us out with that, to put out some election or voter registration awareness information, what documents you need, where you need to go, and that sort of thing, just so that we can help people out. So check out our Twitter page, Polly and Beyond ZW. Aside from that, my Twitter handle and all my social media handles are actually at Chris Charamba. Opinia, I don't know if you have anything.
Yes, please like our Facebook page. It's at Beyond Polly ZW. I'm Opinia Makoni everywhere. Yeah. Oh, and join our group. Where's the link for the group?
The link will be on our Facebook and Twitter pages.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll add it just now.
Yeah, the WhatsApp group, so that people can see what's happening there. There's always interesting conversations. Shout out to all the people that liven it up. You've been listening to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263 Free to say it.
Free to do it.
Peace. Bye.
Bye. Cool, where did you come? And now. Capital 263.